This podcast is brought to you by AJ Products, made in Sweden for the rest of the world. Visit ajproducts.ie to see how we can make your workplace work for you.
Ireland's glory years at Eurovision are far behind us. We now barely even manage to get into the final with our choice of entries. This year, we've taken a very different direction with Bambi Thug. I know you're living a lie. But Israel's relentless bombardment of the Gaza Strip is hanging over the competition.
Well, this is the scene live right now outside the Al-Nasser Hospital in the southern Gaza.
It's prompted calls for Israel's exclusion from the contest. The organising body, the European Broadcasting Union, has resisted. And Bambi has been put under pressure to boycott the competition on social media and through online petitions. That echoes similar campaigns in other countries like the UK.
I think it's very important that we boycott Eurovision because the committee have failed to treat Israel in the same way as they treated Russia.
This is in the news from the Irish Times. I'm Bernice Harrison. Today, is it fair to ask Bambi Thug to boycott the Eurovision?
One of the things we have to ask you about, you have decided that you're going to perform. Can you tell us why that is?
So I stand with anyone doing the boycott. I think if I wasn't in the competition, I would also be boycotting. There are a lot of moving parts. And at the end of the day, without the group of us who is pro-Palestine, it is less competition for the other side to win. And it's less of solidarity there. Obviously, it's incredibly heavy, and I am extremely behind everybody.
That was last Friday. Bambi Thug performed an acoustic version of the song Doomsday Blue. That's the Irish entry. But the interview was different than the usual puff piece, because this year is different because there's controversy and it's political. What happened, Laura?
Yes, on Friday's Late Late Show, Bambi Thug said that while they stand with anyone who chooses to boycott this year's Eurovision, they themselves might do so if they were not a participant. But as a participant, they feel that they can't, and in fact, they want to represent Ireland and, you know, provide competition, shall we say, for Israel. Should, you know, countries drop out from Eurovision, and none have so far, that would in effect make it easier for Israel to triumph. And although they described it as an incredibly heavy situation, in effect, there's no real change on their position and the position of other artists in this year's Eurovision.
And this isn't the first time Bambi has had to publicly defend their participation in the competition. There have been calls for Ireland to boycott Eurovision as far back as December.
That's right. And then when all of the various participants were selected by the countries in this year's Eurovision, you know, we knew who the artists were. It was almost like the focus transferred from broadcasters onto the individual participants. And, you know, they faced, you know, some very valid questions about whether it was right for artists to participate alongside Israel in this year's event. So last month, a group of the artists came together and they rejected the calls to boycott the event. They said they believed in the unifying power of music. They said that music enabled people to transcend differences and foster meaningful conversations and connections. And you know, they framed this completely in the context of Gaza. They said they didn't feel comfortable being silent. They said it was important to stand in solidarity with the oppressed and communicate their heartfelt wish for peace, a ceasefire, and the safe return of all the hostages. And, you know, Bambi Thug was among the group of artists who signed that letter. The others were the UK's Ali Alexander, artists from Norway, Portugal, San Marino, Switzerland's Nemo, who is in fact the favourite to win this year's Eurovision, as well as entries from Denmark, Lithuania and Finland. And you know, they recognise that there is an issue in the statement that they put out. But I suppose ultimately, and this is what has disappointed campaigners, they're not going to drop out.
So the artists have been put under pressure to boycott the competition. But there have also been calls for Israel to be excluded from Eurovision.
Yes. I mean, this has come from all sides. I mean, the Belgium culture minister, Benedicta Linard, has called for Israel to be banned for as long as the war in Gaza continues. And a lot of people have said, well, you know, how come Russia was excluded from Eurovision after their invasion of Ukraine? But nothing seems to be happening following Israel's actions in Gaza.
But if that was to happen, if Israel was to be excluded from Eurovision, and we're so close to it now that that is not going to happen, but who would make that decision? Can you talk me through, well, how the Eurovision works?
Yeah, so I mean, the Eurovision Song Contest it's been on the go since 1956. It was really, as they, you know, as the slogan goes, of unifying Europe, and the participating countries were all members of the European Broadcasting Union, which had been set up about 6 years earlier. And, you know, the EBU, it's an alliance of public service media organisations. And, you know, the membership comes from not from what we might geographically think of as Europe, but from a kind of a technical area called the European Broadcasting Area. So that's why we have the participation of Israel. You know, it's one of those questions, you know, why is Israel in the Eurovision
Song Contest?
And it's
been controversial for a while.
Yeah, I mean, it has been. It has come up several times in the past. So these days, it's led, you know, from its Geneva headquarters by an Irishman, Noel Curran, who is the former Director General of RTE. And there's a governing kind of group, what's known as the Eurovision Song Contest Reference Group, and an executive board.
Sort of a dry title for what must be kind of an exciting group. But
anyway. And they draw up the participants list. They have stressed repeatedly this year, and in fact, you know, Noel Curran has put out a statement about this, saying that this is the broadcasters who take part in Eurovision. It's not the governments.
And it's also Bambi has made the point, look, don't take it up with me, take it up with the EBU.
It is, I think, reasonable to call for a boycott for sure. I think individuals do have power, but you could also say that really, you know, the real power lies with institutions. And that goes, I suppose, back to the organisers and the EBU. And they can protect artists by making different choices. But it's a very difficult, you know, situation. They've agreed this year that the Israeli broadcaster Khan has met the competition rules and they can participate. And that's their stance at the moment.
But as you say, the EBU, and as Linard, the Belgian minister, said, the EBU excluded Russia.
Yes.
So why is this different?
Right. Well, this is what the EBU and Noel Curran, the director general there, has said, that, first of all, comparisons between wars and conflicts are complex and difficult and not theirs to make, which, you know, OK. But in the specific case of Russia, the Russian broadcasters themselves were suspended from the EBU due to persistent breaches of membership obligations and the violation of public service values.
When was that?
So that's what they said recently, a few months ago, when explaining the difference. And the suspension of Russia happened shortly after the invasion of Ukraine. But I also do think that there is a material difference, as the statement went on to say, between the Russian broadcaster, which is a state broadcaster. You know, sometimes RTE gets called a state broadcaster, but it's not in the what we would call a state broadcaster in the traditional sort of sense. A state broadcaster really means a broadcaster that is completely controlled by the government. So you would put the Russian broadcaster in that category, RTE state owned, which is slightly different. And I mean, it's fundamentally different, in fact. And the EBU says Khan, which is the Israeli broadcaster, Khan has a different relationship to the Israeli government, i.e. they're saying they're not the government. Mm. So it's not a question of banning Israel, it's a question of banning their broadcaster. So that's why they're saying this is fundamentally different. It's not actually to do with the what's actually the governments are doing in either of their respective cases.
Now, it seems as if the EBU is going to be let off the hook about having to make a hard decision about Israel, because for a while there, it looked like Israel was going to exclude itself from the Eurovision because its entry, October Rain, was barred on the grounds of breaking rules on political neutrality. Because October Rain, well, it was widely thought to reference the Hamas attacks on October the 7th. Lines in the song included, there's no air left to breathe, and they were all good children, each of them. But what happened then?
Yes, I mean, this forced a lyric change. I mean, and also probably galvanised a lot of the calls for boycott, because it's definitely not going with the spirit of Eurovision to have such political lyrics. It has happened in the past, but there's a bit of a red rag there, I think, with those lyrics.
...have caused uproar. I can read some of them to you now. Who told you boys don't cry? Hours and hours and flowers. Life is not a game for the cowards. Now, the reference to flowers is significant because according to the Israel Hayom newspaper, it is a military slang term for war fatalities. And these are the other...
And so they've had to revise them. And the singer of the song, Eden Golan, who's representing Israel this year, they've now retitled it as Hurricane. And the EBU has said in response that this revised submission with different lyrics is eligible, and that the reference group, the government board, has accepted it after careful scrutiny of the lyrics, and it meets the necessary criteria. But you know, the Eurovision Song Contest takes place in Malmo this year, and it will be extremely interesting to see what kind of reception the Israeli performer and her song receive. She's participating in the second semi-final. It's not the same as Ireland's semi-final. They are deemed likely to qualify for the final. And, you know, so it's casting a shadow over potentially two nights. And I think extremely tricky. Mm. And sensitive and fraught situation.
What has RTÉ said about calls to boycott this year's Eurovision?
Yeah, so RTÉ, I mean, in a way, they've echoed the EBU in that they've said that this is designed to be a non-political contest. Whether it is or not is another matter. You know, they've said that they always approach it in that spirit. The contest is designed to unite audiences, bring people together through shared love of music and entertainment. Now I'm quoting from the statement there. They've also noted that none of the 37 countries have dropped out to date. Now, of course, we've had some developments this week in that there was a letter signed by 400 Irish artists, musicians, poets, writers, photographers and others calling on Bambi Thug to drop out again, and saying that participation in Eurovision is akin to art washing is a phrase that they used. And history would celebrate Bambi Thug if they withdrew from Eurovision, and they urged Bambi Thug to do the right thing. So I did notice as well this week, you know, that RTÉ's head of delegation, Michael Keely, tweeted an older statement from the EBU that had called for their artists to not be abused, either online or offline. They earlier had tried to, I suppose, stamp out some of the abuse that they were receiving. It's very, very difficult to do that, of course. There's always going to be that element, unfortunately, on social media platforms, as well as I said, very, you know, respectful engagement and disagreement. But Michael Keely this week has tweeted, you know, no matter what your views are on this year's song contest, all artists deserve to be treated with courtesy and respect. the contest was specifically founded to unite people through music. We need to ignore all voices advocating hate, division and intolerance. Now, he didn't address a boycott directly, you could say, with that statement. But
though I suppose there was a lot of commentary online after the appearance on The Late Late Show.
Yeah, I think so.
And maybe
I think maybe, you know, because Bambi Thug, as I understand it, has logged off social media for the time being. And
that's
maybe...
wise.
Yeah, it's unfortunate people have to do that, though. It really is. You know, you could say it's actually just an immense amount of pressure being put on one person. But I think they probably did sort of attract criticism in part because of this suggestion that if they weren't the participant, that they would be boycotting. But... look, you can, you know, it's very easy to boycott something that you weren't going to be sort of involved in any way, you know. But certainly the most effective boycotts and the most sort of powerful as political statements probably do involve some level of sacrifice. Now, I'm not saying that that's what they should do or that's what they should have done, but I think when they said that they would, instead of a hypothetical scenario, that maybe that didn't really fly with a lot of the people either watching The Late Late or more likely who heard about it afterwards.
Coming up, we look at some of the political controversies of Eurovision's past.
This podcast is brought to you by AJ Products, creating a more friction-free office. Made in Sweden for the rest of the world. Visit ajproducts.ie to see how we can make your workplace work for you.
Well, now, for all its, you know, poppiness and kitschiness and camp and all the rest, it's not unusual for Eurovision to be caught up in political controversy. I mean, here, when we talk about Eurovision over the last many, many years, it's always been framed as, why is Ireland so rubbish at it now? But for other countries, that's not. They've been involved in political spats every year. Could you talk us through some of them?
Armenia sent a song in 2015 about the Armenian genocide.
Feels like so many times.
Their song was originally called Don't Deny. And in fact, Azerbaijan, you know, does deny the Armenian genocide. And that's where, you know, it was being held that year. So the title was changed to Face the Shadow.
Face every shadow you deny.
And then that was enough to avoid the accusations of there being a political subtext. So there has been like this. I could go through all of them, but let's maybe just focus on Ukraine, because they won Eurovision in 2016 with a song called 1944 by a singer called Jamala. And on the face of it, that was a song about 1944, literally, the deportation of Crimean Tatars in that year. But Russia believed very much that it was about their recent annexation of Crimea.
When strangers are coming, they come to your house. They kill you all and say we're not guilty.
But they got away with it by saying, actually,
they said, yeah, it's history. Look, it's history. And the story, the saga there was many different elements to it. But the end result was that Russia did not participate in the 2017 contest held in Kyiv. So that was a big Eurovision flashpoint. You know, as I say, it is sometimes surprising to people who think this is all just a lot of fun. But for those two countries that year, it was incredibly serious.
You know, the EBU could have banned the Israeli song if they hadn't changed the lyrics, because they banned them before. They banned songs before.
Almost like that might have been
at the get-out clause.
Good solution. That's not good, is not the right word there at all. But because although in the past we've had these controversies, they tend to involve one or two countries. And this year there's been pressure on artists across Europe. It's not just in Ireland to boycott the event. The tone of this year's event is going to be, I think, very difficult to manage. And I'm sure all of the security arrangements in Malmo are going to be extra tight.
Now, maybe I haven't been listening to enough music radio. But I don't actually think I've heard Doomsday Blue being played. I mean, is it all a bit low-key, this run-up to the Eurovision? Like, it's an unusual entry for Ireland. We tend to go for, you know, crooners or squeaky clean pop star type people. And obviously, I'm gliding over the year we sent the turkey. But who is Bambi Thug?
So Bambi Thug is the stage name for Bambi Ray Robinson. And they are a singer from Macroom in Cork. And they're based in London. And their style of music, it's usually described as electro-gothic, but Bambi themselves calls their genre Ouija pop.
Okay. Doomsday Blue.
Ouija pop or hyperpunk avant electropop.
Okay.
And
I haven't heard, I've heard of some of those, but I haven't heard of Ouija pop. But anyway.
Yeah. So they're non-binary, which explains the pronouns we're using. But in more significantly, I think, in a Eurovision context, they're also half Swedish.
Okay.
Their father comes from Sweden. Mm. And as we know,
it's between Sweden, us and Sweden.
Sweden and Ireland jointly hold the record for the most wins. So they trained in ballet, moved to London for a dance scholarship, but they broke their arm and couldn't complete that. But they studied musical theatre. And I think you can see a little bit of the sort of musical theatre influence in their performance of the song. So the song's called Doomsday Blue, which they co-wrote. And, you know, it's not really, I would say it's not really a radio song. And you're right, it's a bit left field for an Irish entry. It's kind of like, you know, there's kind of a screechy bit and then a melodic bit. Screechy bit, melodic bit. It is, like, I think quite effective. Like, it's very Eurovision.
And the stage performance is really Eurovision.
Yeah. So I think, you know, this is...
Okay, putting it up to you. Does the song have a chance?
Well, the song has a good chance of reaching the final.
Okay, and that for us is nearly a win.
Yes, I mean, it almost feels like immaterial given the events that are overshadowing this year's contest. But since the semifinals were introduced 20 years ago, we failed to qualify 11 times and we only got through 6 times. And on the 2 of the occasions we qualified, we came last in the final. You know, it's not really fantastic. The last time we got through was in 2018.
Right.
And that was when Ryan O'Shaughnessy's performance of Together got us through to the final in Lisbon. But we do, according to Eurovisionworld.com, our odds of getting through the semi-final stand at 75%.
Okay, you never know.
We'll get through to the final.
Last year, you did an often hilarious live blog of the Eurovision on the Irish Times website. Will you be doing it again this year?
I don't know if it's going to be hilarious this year, Bernice.
No. Do you think actually the controversy surrounding Eurovision this year is going to be a cloud?
I think it has to be. I think you can't just ignore it. I think it's part of it. It's part of the story of this year's Eurovision. It is difficult, and I think a lot of people feel very conflicted about themselves, like as in Eurovision fans, because they love Eurovision, but at the same time, we can all see what's happening in Gaza, and it does feel strange to just carry on as if nothing is happening. You know, that term art washing that's used in the letter. You actually don't often see that term. We hear about sports washing, you know, we hear about greenwashing. Mm-hmm. But I think it's something that we're going to be hearing more of.
Thanks very much, Laura.
Thanks, Bernice.
That's it for today. For more of Laura Slattery's media, business and Eurovision reports, subscribe at irishtimes.com/subscribe. I'm Bernice Harrison. This episode is produced by Aideen Finnegan. In the news, we'll be back on Monday.